Children and euthanasia is our topic during this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is a bioethicist. His name is Wesley J. Smith. He writes for all kinds of great publications, including Weekly Standard, National Review, also Wall Street Journal, etc. And Wesley, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us. And I should mention that you are a fellow with the Discovery Institute.
Yes, thank you very much, and hello to your listeners.
Okay, so the idea of children and euthanasia is just absolutely unthinkable. First of all, let's define euthanasia.
Yeah, euthanasia, as is basically generally used in the lexicon of the debates today, the so-called right to die debate. Euthanasia is when a doctor lethally injects or kills a patient. At the patient's request, it would be voluntary euthanasia because the patient is suffering from an illness or a disability. And it can be, in some countries, a mental illness.
Now, Canadian courts have made euthanasia a right, quote-unquote, since 2015. Now, apparently, they're even possibly considering extending that so-called right to minors?
Yeah, this is really alarming. You know, in Belgium and the Netherlands, which has lethal injection euthanasia, children are euthanized. Mm. In Belgium, for example, they have no age limit for euthanasia. They even allow the child to make their own decision if the doctor feels the child is mature enough to make a decision. Realize, of course, that you're talking about children who cannot consent to a tattoo. And a recent report from Belgium, from the government, so it's not somebody looking in, but it's the government basically saying this is what we've allowed, has three children euthanized in the year, I believe it was 2016. One was 9 years old, one was 11 years old, and one was 17 years old. In the Netherlands, which also allows euthanasia, euthanasia is permitted for children age 12 and up. And if you're over 16, then the child can decide without parental consent. But the youth in Netherlands, they also kill babies who are born with serious, doctors kill babies who are born with serious disabilities or terminal conditions. Even though that's not technically legal, it is done. It is done in the open. They've even published a bureaucratic checklist to determine which babies can be killed by doctors. And your listeners can look it up. It's called the Groningen Protocol, Groningen Protocol. In Canada, where the Supreme Court of Canada in 2015 created a national right to euthanasia, the government then just totally complied and passed a legalization law throughout the country, and they plan to do it in two parts. The first part, which they've done, is to allow euthanasia for competent adults who have been diagnosed with a medical condition causing irremediable suffering. Now, that's from the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said that irremediable suffering includes people who could be have their suffering alleviated with treatment but choose not to, and can include psychological pain and does not include terminal illness. That was in the Supreme Court case. In the government's rule, the government law, it said death should be reasonably foreseeable, which is a very weak limitation. In fact, for you and I, our death is reasonably foreseeable, I mean, at some point. So that's the law, and then all of the provinces also passed enabling laws. They are now seriously investigating part two, which is to expand the license, euthanasia license and the right, to include people who are not mentally competent adults, such as people with Alzheimer's disease, and specifically children. And what's really alarming is I found two recent articles just over the last couple of months in which, the Canadian Pediatric Society, which is, of course, made up of pediatricians, has basically said, this is our policy for euthanasia if it gets passed. They didn't criticize it. They didn't say you should not legalize euthanasia for children. They even had a support of from pediatricians. 46% of the pediatricians who responded to the questionnaires issued support for expanding the euthanasia law in Canada to include children. And only one-third of the pediatricians who returned questionnaires said they did not think it should be expanded to include children. 8% actually said it should include children with serious mental illnesses that cause suffering. So you can see the handwriting on the wall there. No resistance, no objection, and you already have almost half of the pediatricians in the society that answer these questionnaires saying they wanted to legalize it for children. An even perhaps more alarming article published in the Journal of Medical Ethics out of Oxford University from a working group in a children's hospital that in Ontario, Canada, said that not only were doctors there already volunteering to euthanize children, should it become legal, and one could actually say when should, but that if the doctor believes that the child is mature enough to make a decision on their own, the child can instruct the doctor, do not tell my parents, do not involve my parents, and the doctor should be allowed to kill children who have not had parental consent or even parental notification. And that is being advocated in this article published by a working group in a children's hospital in Ontario, Canada. And for anybody who wants to read the details of that, they can go to discovery.org to my work, to my archive, and it's called Canadian Doctors Get Ready for Child Euthanasia, which appeared in the National Review.
Wow.
You can also get it at nationalreview.com.
Okay, wow, this is really a terrible, because ideas have consequences. It starts with the intellectuals, you know, making the arguments, and then it starts to actually happen. I understand in some cases, like, for example, in Holland, I remember reading, and this is several years ago, that the number of quote-unquote voluntary cases of euthanasia were exceeded by the number of non-voluntary cases of euthanasia. So, in other words, once they started the killing, the doctors doing the killing, they started killing patients, regardless of the patient's will to live or die.
Yeah, those statistics are a little harder to come by because a lot of doctors don't, you know, openly state that they've done it. But they do have a name for it. It's called termination without request or consent. And it's technically not even considered euthanasia. But, you know, I've seen various statistics, but it's at least hundreds a year, which would not be more than the voluntary euthanasia. But there are at least hundreds of year deaths a year of doctors who have killed patients who have not asked to be killed. And that's based on Dutch government statistics. That isn't based on somebody kind of trying to project. And I think it's really important to understand that a lot of people say, well, you're talking slippery slope. No, we're talking facts on the ground. Everything that you and I have discussed in this interview so far has happened. Either the killings that I've described have happened, or the articles which basically advocate expanding euthanasia to children in Canada, those articles have been published and people can read them for themselves. So none of this is kind of alarmist thinking or projecting out if we do A, we'll eventually end up in Z. These are things that are already happening and are actively being advocated at the highest levels of the medical establishment.
Okay, now, I don't want to throw a monkey wrench into the system, but is there a link at all between socialized medicine, where the government takes over the control of the medical decisions in the medical field, and there are limited funds and limited number of people that we can help? Is there any link at all between that and the government's then saying, you know, kind of almost speeding up the process of who should die because, you know, it's costing too much, or they just don't have a quality of life, and therefore, you know, it's just clogging up the system? Is that
I
a fair question?
Yeah, it is a fair question.
Okay.
Because there have been some people who have actually stated that the unstated argument, Derek Humphrey, for one, who founded the Hemlock Society, has written a book in which he stated that the unstated, or the argument for euthanasia that the advocates don't talk about openly because it will hurt their cause, is basically cost containment. And so, yes, that is a reasonable argument. In Canada, they've estimated, you know, they've killed thousands of people in Canada. Doctors have killed thousands of people now in 2 years. It's estimated that has actually saved, particularly since it's not, you know, restricted to the very end of life, that has saved them millions of dollars. I do think, however, that the greater impetus for this, at least at the moment, other than money is ideology. Mm-hmm. And what has happened is that many in society, in the places where, like the Netherlands, Belgium, and Canada, where the population generally has embraced the euthanasia cause, it's because they have rejected the idea of the intrinsic dignity and value of human life and have replaced it with the idea that the primary purpose of society is the elimination of suffering. And that quickly moves into, once you accept that premise, that it's not promotion of righteousness, it's not protecting the life of all citizens, but it is the elimination of suffering, that quickly morphs into eliminating the sufferer. And then after that occurs, which you've seen in all three of those countries, the idea of what is it, what kind of suffering justifies the elimination of the sufferer becomes very elastic. So you see in Belgium, as just an example, you now, and in Netherlands, you have the mentally ill are being killed by psychiatrists. And not only that, but in some cases, the mentally ill are being killed by psychiatrists, and then those dead bodies, these are not people with cancer, these are not people with a heart disease, but they've got a serious mental illness which causes terrible suffering, which it can, of course. Mental illness can cause very, very terrible suffering. They then are moved into operating suite, and their organs are harvested.
Oh.
So they have actually, they've conjoined euthanasia and organ harvesting, and these cases have been written up in respected international organ transplant journals. And there was one I looked at from the Belgium where they followed four lungs that had been taken from euthanasia victims and transplanted, and they were all excited because, gee, the grafts worked well and the organs were transplanted successfully. So I thought, what did these people who were killed, remember, they were killed and then their organs harvested. What were their conditions? Three of them had disabilities. They were not terminally ill, neuromuscular disabilities, and one was mentally ill. So I looked further. What kind of mental illness did this person have who was killed and then his organs harvested? And it was self-harming. So the, quote, treatment for self-harming was to be killed and then organs harvested. I can't think of anything more cruel than that. Telling somebody who's having a terrible, difficult time getting through the night that their deaths have greater value than their lives. It's an awful and wicked thing.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing that's so troublesome about all this is that the main agents in all this, it would seem, are doctors. And yet doctors,
yes,
traditionally took a Hippocratic oath to save lives as opposed to kill lives. And here they're becoming active participants in the killing of human beings.
Yes, it's homicide. And of course, they don't take the Hippocratic Oath anymore because the Hippocratic Oath specifically precludes euthanasia and assisted suicide. I mean, pagan Hippocrates, 2,500 years ago, had greater wisdom than Dutch doctors, Canadian doctors, and some American doctors and Belgian doctors today.
All right, we have about a minute left, and I hate to bring this word up, but I'm going to say it. I'm reminded a little bit of the Nazi doctors, at least to some degree. I mean, obviously not on the same scale, but it's the same kind of thinking.
Well, it's a utilitarianism, and we have to be careful. It wasn't,
yes,
Nazism that made doctors in Germany kill babies and disabled people, which they did. It was eugenics, and it was a lack of belief in human exceptionalism. And now the same thing is being done, particularly in the Netherlands, with the killing of disabled babies. And people call it compassion, but it's the same cruelty. And it was called compassion back then, too. It was called a healing treatment that ended the suffering of the child, ended the suffering of the family, and of the Reich. So everything old is new again, isn't it?
Wow. All right, we're out of time, but thank you so much for joining us. You can read Wesley J. Smith's material at discovery.org. Thank you so much, Wesley. All the best.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, bye-bye now.